45. Tariana. There were drums beating, loud, obnoxious drums that made her head ache like the worst hangover of her life. Tariana cracked one eye, her gummy lashes pulling apart painfully. The light that assaulted her far too bright. Wincing, she rolled away, and the bed disappeared from under her. A muttered oof filled her ears as she landed, and Tariana found herself staring at Marcus, whom she'd landed on. He blinked blearily at her, his eyes swollen and bloodshot, face smeared with soot. Then his gaze snapped into focus, and he rolled her off, clamoring to his feet, hoarse profanity spewing from his lips as he went to the stove. The fire, we need to keep it going or... Sun's up. Marcus ceased loading wood onto the coals and slowly turned to the gap in the wall where sunlight streamed in. Despite her head aching like she'd been hit in the head with a brick, Tariana grinned and pointed a finger at him. And we're not dead.
Not dead,
he repeated blankly, as though she'd spoken in a language he didn't quite understand. How much of that smoke did you breathe in? She asked.
Too much.
He gave a weary shake of his head, then braced one hand against the wall.
I must have fallen asleep. I'm sorry.
Perhaps he had, but only recently, because the coals were still glowing, a few flames rising from the charred wood, which meant he'd stayed awake long after she'd passed out, fueling the fire, keeping her warm, keeping her alive. Crawling on her hands and knees, she wrapped her arms around Marcus's neck, pressing her forehead against his. There was no part of her that didn't hurt. No part of her that wasn't exhausted. No part of her that didn't fear the coming night. But together, she felt like they would survive this, no matter what came at them. And as though he sensed her thoughts, Marcus rose to his feet, pulling her up with him.
We've work to do.
Together, they righted the stove, using the leg shaft of her boot to hold the stovepipe in place once they'd fitted it back through the opening in the roof. Marcus worked on filling the hole in the floor with dirt, while Tariana took the kettle outside to collect snow. The wind had died down, but while no snow had fallen in the night, large drifts had formed, entirely altering the landscape from yesterday. The wolves had done a fine job of fouling up the area around the shack. Scat and piss drove her to walk some distance to find some clean snow, her eyes peeled for any sign of motion. But there was nothing. And though she knew there must be animals about beyond the wolves, in that moment, it felt like they were utterly alone in this wild expanse of the world. The tiny wooden shack, their only refuge. And tomorrow, they'd leave it, would attempt to cross 20 miles of barren wilderness before dusk fell. Warmth embraced her chilled body as she opened the door to the shack. Marcus had filled in the hole and replaced the board they'd pried off the wall. A cheery fire now burned in the stove. He had the stiff wolfskin spread on the floor, and on one of the plates sat what she could only presume was the same wolf's brain. If you think that's what we are having for breakfast, you're mistaken.
It's not for eating.
He gave the brain a poke with his index finger.
It's for the hide. Did you know that every animal possesses a brain large enough to tan its own hide?
I've met a few idiots in my day who'd put that theory to the test. She set the kettle on the stove, noticing that he'd also retrieved some of the wolf meat from the icebox, which was currently thawing on a plate. You read that in one of your books? He nodded. You know, she said, I find it interesting that you've apparently read so many books, and yet I've never once seen you with one in hand.
Books are heavy. I don't pack what I don't feel inclined to carry.
Smiling to herself, Tariana didn't say anything, only set to tidying up the shack from the chaos of the prior night. His sigh filled her ears.
Fine. I had the privilege of being taught to read prior to my move to Campus Lessendore. I was a sickly child, so I spent a lot of time in my father's library, as well as the libraries of his friends.
She'd never pressed him for details about his illness, sensing he didn't want to talk about it. Sickly? He grimaced.
My attacks were a near daily occurrence when I was young. The physicians advised my father to keep me indoors and away from strenuous activity. Obviously, money was no object, so he indulged me with all the books and tutors I wanted.
She knew from his admission to Magnius during the crossing that he'd been born to the Domitius family, but this was the first time he'd ever acknowledged it. It was a large family with many branches, but the patriarch and holder of the family seat in the Senate lived in the villa neighboring that of Senator Valerius, Lydia's father. Which meant it was possible Marcus had known Lydia prior to leaving for Legion training.
Lessendore has a vast library, he continued. Once I was past the stage of needing to sleep through our set liberty hours, I took to spending my free time there. When I began officer training at age 10, half my days were spent in the library, though of course, most of the material I read at that point related to military matters.
All your liberty hours in a library, Tariana murmured, inspecting the pads of her fingers, which had been scalded while she struggled with the stovepipe. Who knew I had such a fondness for bookish people? Marcus lifted his head askance, but she only waved the comment away with one hand. She'd never spoken of Lydia to him, and she didn't intend to. It was possible Cassius had divulged her friendship, that Marcus knew the details of her friend's betrayal, but Tariana found herself not wanting to hear it. What was done was done. He only shrugged.
I don't get much chance to read for pleasure anymore. Servius picks up books for me when he sees something I might like, sells them off when I'm through with them.
Retrieving the kettle, he rinsed the dirt out of the two cups and filled them. Then he dumped the rest of the water on the back of the hide and began rubbing it into the stiff skin.
Would you mind getting more snow? This is going to take a fair bit of water.
Putting on the wool hat and mittens this time, Tariana ventured back outside, clenching her teeth as the air bit into her warmed skin. How people lived in this God's forsaken place was beyond her. The unrelenting heat and rain of Erinoquia was paradise by comparison. The snow crunched beneath her feet, and it wasn't long until it felt as though she was walking barefoot, the thin leather soles affording little protection, and snow falling inside her hacked-off boot, though her thoughts pulled her away from the discomfort. It was strange to hear Marcus talk about his past, because he didn't, not ever. How did a child, too sick to do anything but read books in his father's library, become the commander of a legion? That fateful day back in Erinoquia, Titus had told her it was genius, but that was only part of it. Willpower for certain, ambition. But those were only words, and what she found herself desperately wanting was the stories of those attributes in action, because it had been those events that had shaped him. She wanted to know him, wanted to know all of him, because snow crunched. Tariana leapt upright, swinging the kettle in a wide arc, missing Marcus by an inch. Heart in her throat, she lowered her weapon. "You startled me." He opened his mouth, probably to reprimand her for not remaining alert, but then he shook his head and said, "You all right?"
"I was just thinking."
Squinting, he looked up at the position of the sun.
"We've got about 6 hours until the sun starts to set. We need to eat, deal with this hide, collapse that tunnel, and prepare for whatever tonight delivers upon us."
"Right." She fell into step next to him, the kettle swinging in her grip. And before she knew what she was doing, Tariana asked, "How did you meet Felix?"
"At Campus Lessendor."
Rolling her eyes, she said, "Obviously. I meant, how did you meet him when you were there?"
"Oh."
She could feel him looking at her, but kept her eyes on the snow, waiting for his answer.
"We were delivered on the same day. His number is directly before mine, so we were always lined up together. We're bunkmates in the dormitories. 8 bunks per room, 2 boys per bunk, so 16 boys.
"Thanks for doing the math for me." He huffed out a laugh, then his face tightened.
I fought with him before we left camp. I was convinced it had been him who'd betrayed me, and the things I said.
"When we get back, you can explain," she said. "He'll understand. He'll forgive you."
"Some things are unforgivable."
"Maybe so. But you won't know until you apologize, and you won't be able to do that if you don't get out of Cyburn. So, focus on that instead." His throat bobbed, and he gave a tight nod. And then, to her astonishment, he closed his hand around hers, holding it tightly as they walked. Something he'd never done before. That they'd never been able to do. She smiled at the snow, a soft ache stealing over her. "This is something stupid. This is a mistake. This is folly." She was going to do it anyway. Looking up at him, she asked, "Will you tell me about growing up in Lessendor?"